Kanta Shaka with their husbands and friends. Virutishaha in large numbers. Yasam of them. Vrajadbihi flying. Shitikanta, oh blue-throated one. Manditam decorated. Nabaha the sky. Vimanai with airplanes. Kalahamsa swans. Pandubihi white. Translation, O never-born, O blue-throated one, not only my relatives, but also other women dressed in nice clothes and decorated with ornaments are going there with their husbands and friends. Just see how their flocks of white airplanes have made the entire sky beautiful. Let's go. She didn't say that. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Here, Lord Shiva is addressed as Abhava, which means one who is never born, although generally he is known as Bhava, one who is born. Rudra, Lord Shiva, is actually born from between the eyes of Brahma, who is called Swayambhu because he is not born of any human being or material creature, but is born directly from the lotus flower which grows from the abdomen of Vishnu. When Lord Shiva is addressed here as Abhava, this may be taken to mean one who has never felt miseries, or Bhava, one who has never felt miseries. Sati wanted to impress upon her husband that even those who were not related to her father were going, to say nothing of herself, who was intimately related with him. Lord Shiva is addressed here as blue-throated. Lord Shiva drank an ocean of poison and kept it in his throat, not swallowing it, or allowing it to go down to his stomach, and thus his throat became blue. Since then, he has been known as Nila Kanta, or blue-throated. The reason that Lord Shiva drank an ocean of poison was for others' benefit. When the ocean was churned by the demigods and the demons, the churning at first produced poison. So, because the poisonous ocean might have affected others who are not so advanced, Lord Shiva drank all the ocean water. In other words, he could drink such a great amount of poison for others' benefit. And now, since his wife was personally requesting him to go to her father's house, even if he did not wish to give that permission, he should go. Out of his great kindness, Lila Kanta. End of purport. Pashya prayantir ava abhavanya yoshito pi pyalankrita kantasaka barutashaha yasam vrajadbhi sitikanta manditam nabho vimanai kalahamsa pandubihi. O never born, Abhava, O blue-throated one, Shitakanta, not only my relatives but also other women dressed in nice clothes and decorated with ornaments are going there with their husbands and friends. Just see how their flocks of white airplanes have made the entire sky very beautiful. Jnana-timirandasya gananjana-sarakaya chakshu-miritam jena tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa gadamayam dadati svapadantikam. So we're hearing the glories of Lord Shiva from one who knows his glories very well, his beloved wife. So she's glorifying Lord Shiva in two ways in this verse. One is by addressing him as Abhava, O never born. And there's a purpose behind her doing that. But first, Prabhupada explains that normally Lord Shiva is called by another name. Bhava means one who is born. His birth is from the furrowed brow of Lord Brahma. Pretty interesting birth. But when the four Kumaras were born from the body of Lord Brahma, and he requested them some service, requested from them some service, and they declined, he became angry. And from his anger, Lord Shiva appeared. So Lord Shiva is the direct son of Lord Brahma, and so Bhava, one who takes birth. But the other sense of Abhava is, although he appeared that way, in the same way Krishna makes some appearance, but Krishna is also unborn, although he's born. So in the same way, Lord Shiva is born, but he's unborn. He appears that way, but it's not by an ordinary type of a birth, a seminal type of impregnation and then gestation and then birth. So abhava. So it's a compliment, or it's a recognition of her husband's very unique and exalted position. While others might call him bhava, she's addressing him as abhava. O exalted one. So she has a purpose in addressing her husband that way. She wants something. It's commonly called flattery. Like Prabodh Ananda Sarasati. Prabhupada was asked in Atlanta when Prabhupada was visiting, and the Radha-Damodar bus parties came, and they asked Srila Prabhupada, how should we distribute your books? And he referred to this verse of Prabodh Ananda Saraswati from Chaitanya Chandramrita. Maybe when Dravida comes again, we can get him to recite this verse. Prabhupada recited it. And it begins with flattery. Oh, my dear sir, you are so intelligent. You are so pious. You are such a great person. And then Prabhupada explained, hearing that, the individual thinks, oh, oh, oh. What is it that you have to say? You are a very intelligent person. You've recognized all of my qualifications. At last I found another intelligent person in the world. What is it that you have to say? And then Prabodhananda Saraswati says, just for one moment, throw away all this rubbish learning that you've gotten and just listen very carefully to the wonderful message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's how you should distribute my books. So, sati here is using, it's appropriate glorification, it's not false. There's some flattery that's false. And her words of appreciation of her husband are not at all false. Abhava, oh, never born, you are so exalted that you're in a unique category. Well, your father is in a similar unique category. He's also Svayambhu. Svayambhu is one who appears on his own. Svayambhu, self-born. Born from the abdomen of, or the lotus flower that grows from the abdomen of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Svayambhu, Lord Brahma. But as Lord Brahma appeared in that way, you've appeared from Lord Brahma, and you're Abhava, you're in this unique category of very, very, very specially exalted persons. And then, Shitikanta, more commonly, Nilakanta. So, white-throated. And Prabhupada gives the explanation, as is described in the eighth canto of the Bhagavatam, the churning of the milk ocean, and as the milk ocean was being churned, the first thing produced was an ocean of poison out of the ocean of milk. And the demigods and the demons were terribly afraid. Everyone is finished. So they went to that most magnanimous person who could risk everything and has had the power to put everything at risk and have no risk, have no danger for himself. Please do something with this ocean of poison. You know, with many things that we do, just live for a while and you'll find out that there are unintended consequences when you're doing something. You don't anticipate certain consequences to come, but sure enough, unintended consequences may arise. Now what do? There's no plan for those unintended consequences. Krishna! Or in this case, it was the demigods went to Lord Shiva. Ashutosh. He's easily pleased. So help! And he's also extremely compassionate. So compassionate that immediately it was yes. I'll personally drink this ocean of poison. I mean, he could have put it somewhere else besides in his mouth, but he put it in his mouth, an ocean. So who can drink an ocean of anything? Lord Shiva can. And an ocean of poison, Lord Shiva can. But he's also expert. He didn't swallow it. He held it in his throat. And the poison was so virulent that his throat became blue through contact with the poison, and thus Nilakanta. So what is Sati doing? She's glorifying her husband, but it's with some purpose behind it. She wants something. That's not right. Appreciate someone because you want something from that someone. Like bribery or flattery or something like that. It's not good. But she did it. So the message, the implicit message is, oh, great one, you who are not born, you're in this unique category unto yourself. Oh, you who are so compassionate that you'll even drink an ocean of poison for the benefit of others who could be endangered. Oh, my dear husband, I want something. You're very compassionate, and you'll, even if there's risk involved, you can swallow an ocean of poison. You can handle it, Lord Shiva. Let's go. That's what's behind her message. And the other part of the verse is describing the scene. Nabho vimanai kala hamsa pandubihi. The last line. The whole sky is filled with vimanas. And they're swan-like vimanas coloring and decorating the sky. And look, who's in those vimanas? Anya Yoshito, Anya Yoshita, other women besides my sisters and my mother's sisters, there's Anya Yoshita, there's all kinds of other women that aren't even related to my father, and they're also going. And look, beautiful ornaments, fine garments. Oh, I want to go and join the party, this social event at the place of my father, very nearby too. It's not so far away. Her desire, she's very clear. She's not hiding what her desire is. She wants to go. Now, we had a nice discussion in the Bhakti Vriksha program yesterday. It was very interesting helping a person go through the stages of discriminating the difference between demigod worship and worship of Krishna. And after some time he said, I'm okay with not going to the demigods for temporary and limited things, because that's all they can deliver is temporary limited things, because that's the realm that they operate within. But why not go to Krishna for temporary limited things? Because you may need some temporary and limited things to, you know, orient yourself to get ready for the eternal things. So what's wrong with that? Karma Mishra Bhakti. Kama Mishra Bhakti. Devotion that's not Shuddha Bhakti, but mixed devotion. And then, eventually, the desires will fade. And then you're left with just, you know, devotion to Krishna. What's wrong with that approach? Why all this emphasis on Shuddha Bhakti? He didn't use the exact language, but that was his question. So, it's related to this verse and or what's happening in this section of the Bhagavatam. Just prior to the verse that we were discussing is the quote from the second canto, akama, sarvakama, mokshakama, udharadi, tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Which, in one sense, justifies what the man was saying. Because, so your current position may be akama. You have no desire. It may be sarvakama. You have lots of desires. All of desires. So many desires. Strong desire. One of them may be worship God, but I've got some other strong desires. Sarvakama. Or, I want liberation. Moksha kama. So in all circumstances, tivrena bhakti yogena. So there's many answers to why that's not ideal. It's certainly possible. Become Dhruva Maharaj and you can become free from all material desire. Go from mixed devotion to pure devotion. Karma Mishra Bhakti to Shuddha Bhakti. But it's generally not a program that takes 6 months. And generally, it's a program that once one gets that which satisfies one, it's see you later, Krishna. until I have another set of needs, then it's hello Krishna, checking in, and see you later Krishna when it's taken care of. Although that is true, that program can gradually free one from the material desire just by contact with Krishna. So better to go to Krishna than those who are simply the supplying agents of material necessities. But the ideal is to achieve love. And in that condition of love, what's the nature of the relationship when every time one approaches, there's a requisition slip? Oh, my dear Lord, oh, most merciful one, here's my list for today. And that becomes the relationship. The order supplier, relationship. And that's a relationship, but it's not a loving relationship. So if the goal is loving relationship, then just go there to a loving relationship. And when loving relationship is there, then automatically, not only the things that we need, but the loving personality doesn't give the thing that one doesn't need, because one doesn't need it. And there's so many things we think we need that we don't need. And as we progress, what our calculation of what we need also becomes reduced. There are lots of things we think we need that we don't need. Just like I gave the example of loving parent, that a child may want some toy or some game or something and hound the parents. I want to watch television. I want to have a Game Boy. I want a doodad, the latest doodad. Can you get me a latest doodad, Dad? You don't need it. It's what the loving father may say, no. I mean, in a loving way, no. Because it's a distraction. So there's so many things that we may want, we think we want, but it's not in our real interest. And a loving relation may not acknowledge that and say, okay. Now in this case, it's not exactly a straight okay, but it's a qualified better watch out, but okay. Reply. Like a yellow flashing light from Lord Shiva, rather than a green light for other purposes that we discussed yesterday. It's a nice lesson embedded in this is don't approach the personality of Godhead for the fulfillment of desires, because consequences may not be very good. And she knows the consequences aren't going to be good on one level, but that because she knows there's the strife between her husband and her father. But she's overlooking that fact and the wisdom of it's not a good thing to enter into some close dealing, because there's going to be sparks. Not a good idea. We don't have to go. We can be happy in other ways. One should not use Krishna for one's material purposes. Even in approaching him, there's benefit for sure for one who approaches God acknowledging his greatness, as Sati is approaching Lord Shiva, acknowledging Abhava and Shitta Kanta, his magnanimity as a compassionate person. But compassion, so from the other side, the compassionate person may hear a plea. Oh, you're a very compassionate person. Therefore, do something that is unwise because you're a compassionate person. A compassionate person may not do that which is unwise because they're a compassionate person. Even the person feels, I want. And what holds the whole situation together ultimately is the loving relation between the two parties, the trust that's invested in the authority personality, in this case Lord Shiva and Sati. But in our practical dealings, we may have a situation where we have some responsibility to give care and guidance and shelter to others, or and be trained how to do that. So here's some training how to do that. There may be some appeal. I want such and such. And then it's a matter of managing that such and such situation that may not be ideal. So, concession might be there, because the understanding is the other party, Krishna, does this in Bhagavad Gita, or he's indicating, because one of the questions that arose is, if the demigods are not to be approached, then why did Krishna create the situation of having demigods and worship of demigods? It's just go to Krishna, because some people don't want to go to Krishna. They just want things. And there's a convenient way to get things without anything ultimate or transcendental or real sacrifice and surrender from the heart. Just, you know, do your yajna and bring the items for the yajna and make that sacrifice and get what you want. Like a vending machine. No relationship, just a vending machine. And, you know, ultimate, you know, I don't know about that ultimate. All I know is I want something immediate. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he makes the faith strong of those persons to do that. Because he knows what they want. They don't want him, they want something temporary. Antavattu palam tesham. Something limited and temporary. And that's the scope. And as far as they're concerned, there's nothing more. What's more? Well, after this life, a better vending machine. An upgrade. But relationship? Now, there are demigod worshippers within the Vedic context who are very devoted to a particular demigod. But without understanding the purpose behind the approach to that demigod, or the function that they are serving. So the Bhagavatam is taking us to that place that's Shuddha Bhakti. And why? And some of the consequences, not only in this story, but in the various narrations, the consequences of fruitive activity, even religiously performed, intended for fruitive prosperity. At the end of this canto, a very elaborate description by Narada of the unintended consequences, or unanticipated consequences of fruitive activity. It's bondage. And bondage brings pain and suffering. So it springs out of ignorance. And what is it that we're ignoring in that state of ignorance? If we're ignoring our relationship with Krishna. And what's the essence of that relationship with Krishna? It's a loving relationship. And when it was in that loving relationship with Krishna, need I ask Krishna, can you take care of this necessity, that necessity? Just like a child that's dependent upon their loving parents. They don't have to ask their parents for this necessity, that necessity. The loving parents it's already provided because of their loving position. It's a hard, the pause was thinking of calamities in the world, like, you know, the Haiti situation recently. Why, this question commonly arises, the tsunami that happened before and the earthquake and this thing and that, the calamities that happen in nature, why do these horrific things happen? And the answer that's provided that seems callous is because it's the karma of the individuals. Now, that's not very satisfying to the heart. Or, you know, well, there's lots of sinful people around the world. Why those people? Why not all the people of the world get this horrific result? It should be fairly shared. Calamity for everybody. So the clock, the calamity clock is not, you know, fixed in such a way that it happens all at once, except at the time of universal devastation or the appearance of Kalki Avatar and other circumstances like that, the Lord can wholesale clear house. But for the individual, rather than the mass level on the individual, if there's some difficulty, it certainly has to do with one's relationship with the Supreme. And one needs to turn one's attention to that relationship with the Supreme. Not simply, get me out of this circumstance, it's painful. But all the while I'm going through this difficult circumstance, let my attention be simply fixed upon you, like Prahlad. His perfection was remembrance, constant remembrance of the Supreme Lord. Vishnu Smaranam, constant remembrance of the personality of Godhead. And by that, he was fully protected and sustained on the spiritual platform, everything that he needed. Yoga Kshema Vahamyaham. Everything that he required was provided, and everything that he had was preserved by the Lord's divine arrangement. So there's the advocacy for Shuddha Bhakti. And this one is not good. In any relationship with a superior, where one comes with their requisition slip in hand, it's not ideal. It's not the platform of loving exchange. It's some exchange, but it's not rich with loving dealing. There was another point I wanted to make, which I'm forgetting just now. Yeah. The other point is, practical application is, in relation to our sadhana, like our chanting of the holy name. When we're chanting the holy name, or worshiping the deity, or hearing the message of the scripture, or any of the other primary activities of bhakti, we should be fully present with what it is that we're doing. With chanting, we're inviting the presence of the personality of Godhead in this merciful manifestation of himself in the form of his holy name. And the calling of the Lord in the form of his holy name shouldn't be mechanical. Or, you know, our attention is upon our desires and we're calling the holy name of the Lord. We should connect our attentiveness and awareness to the personality of Godhead and be present in our relationship of simply wishing to serve him and inviting his mercy into our hearts so that we can serve him purely and without any motivation of any kind. But it go away from that attentiveness, and we have something, not exactly, but something similar to what we have here, calling appropriate names of Lord Shiva, but with, so it's good. She's his wife. She's appreciating his greatness and his compassion. But with the major contemplation upon the fulfillment of some desire. So to get the full effect of chanting the holy name, one of our 10 offenses against the chanting of holy name is to maintain, not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy name, but instead to maintain material attachments when chanting the holy name. We maintain material attachments, and those material attachments become nurtured that we don't want. We want, at least in Shuddha Bhakti aspiration, let those material attachments become removed. So we shouldn't maintain them. And one of the ways to not maintain them is be present in the relationship with Krishna when chanting Krishna's holy name. And then naturally that will carry over to how you engage in your practical activities when you're not just chanting japa in your morning sadhana. This is for Krishna's service. 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 Not, oh, this Krishna is very kind, he gave me what I want. Or even I wasn't expecting this as something I want, but here it is, and I guess Krishna wants me to enjoy it. Because both of those things are checked in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Dharmasya hi apavargasya. One should not perform dharma for anything other than ultimate liberation. So the motivation behind doing this and doing that is to be with Krishna. But then the other is, supposing you weren't like calling out to Krishna, please give me some material facility, but supposing some material facility comes your way because Krishna is very pleased, you've done some nice service and some material facility comes your way. Never, even unasked for, if something comes to you, it should never be used in sense gratification, but only used in service to Krishna and not otherwise. It's like double check. Because if one, once again, if one moves from that position, if one is not attentive to the Shuddha Bhakti position, that will creep in. And when that creeps in, the heart becomes contaminated. And when the heart becomes contaminated, the relationship with Krishna becomes obscured and the material thing becomes the consuming agent. And one gets tricked by Maya. In conclusion, if it can happen to Sati, it certainly can happen to us. So, beware. It's not like, you know, the buyer beware kind of a notice. This product inherently will destroy you. It's not that kind of beware. But it's more the beware of, like, when you have a razor. Prabhupada's example, when you have a razor, it has a purpose for shaving. But when you're using the razor, be very careful. Don't be inattentive. Because inattention, safety razors make it easier. You can still be inattentive. But be attentive, because if you're inattentive, it can cause harm. Cut and blood all over the place. So don't be inattentive. When engaging oneself in devotional service and taking up the practices of bhakti, be very attentive. Understand what the process of bhakti is for, and don't be inattentive. It's the same as the injunction from Padma Purana. The purpose behind all the rules and regulations is to always remember Krishna. And by the way, don't forget him. Because always remembering Krishna means don't forget him. And that's the purpose behind anything that we do in our regulated practices of bhakti, vaidhi, sadhana bhakti, to come to the stage where we're always attentive to Krishna and never forgetting Krishna and serving him favorably with whatever comes into our purview. Even if we may be not so qualified to understand how a particular asset or circumstance or something that unfolds in our life, how to properly use that in Krishna's service. But don't move from the position of wanting to properly please Krishna in each circumstance of life. Then we're protected. Stray from that, and it becomes one of these. Very risky. Beware. That's the message or lesson from this. See if there's any comments or questions. Jai Jagannath. Well, there's a third one, and that's like where Dhruva started. It wasn't so much, I know what the goal is. It was just, this is a means to get the material thing I want, without even any sense of the goal. And so? He has material desire. That's right. That was in our discussion yesterday evening, by the way. Our application needs to be realistic with what our capacity is. And so, how do I understand what my capacity is? Because I've got material desires. I'm in the soup. So we need guidance from persons that are qualified to take us beyond our affinity for matter. It's required. It's common sense says that it's required, and scripture says it's required, and it's required. It's how Krishna works things. And through that association with a qualified person who has no affinity for matter, they can guide us. Even it may be the gradual, as opposed to from 0 to 100 already. Just by gradual guidance, by gradual progression, one can come to the pure stage. It's essential. Yes. It's not recommended, for one thing, by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, and it's in this age of Kali to have a qualified Brahmana that can actually execute the purpose behind those yajnas. They're not available. Yajna is required for elevation. They're not qualified persons who can, the followers to follow all the procedures, and the brahmanas to direct the yajna. It's not possible in this age of Kali. It's not recommended. But in previous ages, we find it goes on. So we have another yajna. and nor are those persons of the level of piety of previous ages. They're Kali Yuga versions. Nor are the priests qualified. But there's some submission, and so there's some benefit that comes. And that encourages them. Some benefit is coming. It works. Come on, my friend, come and take part in the sacrifice yourself and prosper like me, etc. Okay, we're in full agreement. And this is Lord Chaitanya's teaching. Now, Prabhupada had a... And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur also had a unique plan. While recognizing the limitations of Varnashram per se, they encouraged Daivi Varnashram, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also. You know, so it's in our line where we're Vaishnavas and there's the elevator, but there's also the stairway for those who won't take the elevator. And it's more complex, and the net is broader. Meaning there's more persons that can participate in feeling inspired in a religious way to take up their religious duties and make sacrifice unto Vishnu. Those that may not be ready to take up the same strictures of sadhana bhakti that are on the path of shuddha bhakti. But it's to help bring them to that position. And so elevate them so they can come to that position. But it's very challenging for reasons that you mentioned and more. For your information, there was a seminar in Mayapur, like a 5-day seminar during the educational part prior to the Navadvip Parikrama section. 5 days of seminars on different topics, and one of the topics was Daivi Varnashram, and different speakers were presenters. And, you know, an interesting group of persons that were speaking. Besides Bhakti Raghava Swami, that's like really his thing. There are a group of others. Devamrita Prabhu was one of the speakers. I think, I'm not sure who all the other speakers were. Balabhadra was one, from the cow protection, Balabhadra. So that's all recorded. And, you know, it's there are devotees going down that path. Shivaram Raj is a strong advocate of that being practically implemented, not just talked about theoretically, but practically implemented. It's getting some life, some energy. But it's complex. You know, to get agreement on that topic in a group of people in a room, it's all over the place. Yes. Hare Krishna.
So you mentioned that like it's not in the baby things that, you know, just telling somebody this is a karma and it says by the heart. But what does one say to a mother whose, I guess, child is molested? Can you say it's a karma or can you say somebody's demonic passion?
Well, you know, the question from the mother or the victim is, why my son or daughter? Why, you know, why? As opposed to, you know, so many other people that could be victims, why my son or daughter? So there's a perpetrator out there, and over here is the victim. And why that victim and why not some other people? Why that person was victimized? Or as Prabhupada says, one person is born with a silver spoon in their mouth, and the other person is pauper. Why? So, same principle. why? Yes, there's an evil force out there. Why that evil force strikes here? It's a very complicated answer. And it's, you know, part of the why question is with a child abuse situation. It's an innocent child. But, you know, prior to that life, there was something else. And prior to that life, something else. And some combination of things that brought that situation about. Now, you're supposing you're a parent. And there's, you know, there's potential victims or potential perpetrators out there. But Prabhupada's example is, like, a parent may have all concern for the health of their child. And they can have the best doctors and the best medicine and the best prevention and the best this and best that, but someone can contract a disease. And another doesn't have all those preventions and they don't contract any disease. How come? So the it's not satisfying to the heart to say, well, it's just a karma. You know, shrug your shoulders and walk down the road. You know, so what can you do? It's just a karma. If we don't stop there and say it's just their karma, we don't, if it's someone's karma to have something, some misfortune happen in their life, we don't like shove them in front of a car and say, you know, it's just your misfortune. We protect them in every possible way. We do our duty as best we can, and misfortune may, knowing that misfortune may strike in any case, we take all precaution and we depend on Krishna. Anything on the lady's side? Yes? A consciousness of a devotee in a difficult situation. A lot depends on the circumstance, what the devotee should do. You have a particular circumstance in mind? Just thinking in a general way. Depends on the circumstance and the resources that you're aware of that Krishna has placed at your disposal. The dependence upon Krishna is the foundation that should never leave, should never be adjusted or tinkered with or tampered with. Practical things that we may do to address a difficult situation, it's you know, within an individual's capacity to consider how to address a particular difficult situation. I was discussing this point with one of my godbrothers, Badri Narayan Prabhu, and he gave this example. Like, I've heard him give the example many times before. According to scripture, it is said that a bird can fly as high as their wings can carry them. Meaning the converse, they can't fly higher than the wings can carry them. So what one individual can do about a difficult situation that they're facing may be greater or lesser than another individual depending upon how high their wings can carry them. But what should never change is our dependence upon Krishna. And the ultimate issue, that's what's important in any case, not the outcome of a particular situation as much as that deepening of one's relationship with Krishna. Okay. You're trying to match what I'm saying to the particular adverse circumstance that you're thinking of. Yes. A little bit more about mercy. Okay. Something more about mercy is mercy comes from merciful. So if one who, our position, we're very tiny, and just like speaking about a difficult circumstance or a troubling circumstance, we're very tiny. What can we do? Because we're very tiny when there's this sometimes big troubling circumstance. We require mercy. So mercy means something from a superior source coming down into our life, and divine mercy is the ultimate mercy. So religious teaching in general, of all descriptions, not this variety, that variety, but in principle, invoking mercy, descending divine mercy into one's life to address something that on my own strength I have no capacity, or at least appears I have no capacity. I'm circumstantially in trouble. So one turns to God for divine dispensation or mercy. Along with, so one important part of mercy is it's not just passive, it's active. We want to serve, to show to that merciful source, person, God, that we want to serve Him favorably. Just like in a contemporary event is Tiger Woods, and you know the problem that he has, you know, a big person came and crashed. So he's now getting religious. He's turning to God for mercy because he's got a problem that he can't handle on his own. It's too big for him. It's consumed him, it's destroyed him, it's powdered him. You know, as it says in Bhagavad Gita, one who has once been honored, dishonor is worse than death. He looks terrible. So he's turning to God for mercy to overcome a problem that he has. So mercy can come from others also, his friends, his family, and well-wishers. But, you know, they're just simply agents of this descending mercy. Agents of descending mercy. And we require, because our natures were very tiny, we require mercy. As a unit, we're whole. But we also, as a unit, we have a relationship with the Supreme, and we require that connection with the Supreme, and that connection is the form of mercy. There's something more in mercy. Okay. Okay, we'll end there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.